Hello, everyone. Welcome to this exciting UNICEF panel. My name is Ricardo Pineda. I'll be the moderator for today. And as young people, we're known for embracing innovation, new technologies, and challenging the status quo. However, when it comes to decision making and when it comes to actual meaningful representation, unfortunately, children and youth are constantly being sidelined. We're still trying to break that glass ceiling of representation and meaningful participation when it comes to having youth in the tech sector. This panel today comes at a crucial moment in time for the United Nations. The UN and member states will convene at a flagship event known as the Summit of the Future, which will be held during September 2024, to establish the rules for more free, open, secure, and a safe digital future, as outlined in the Global Digital Compact. This momentous occasion is what's setting the stage for our deep dive today. So with this in mind, allow me to welcome our panel of distinguished guests. Each brings very unique perspectives and insights that will guide us as we navigate the complexities of integrating the youngest in a way that is meaningful and empowering. I'll let each one to introduce themselves, and please, Tania, we can start with you.
Thanks so much. Thanks so much, Ricardo. My name is Tania Okoni. I'm a senior advisor on innovation at UNICEF, so just in case I forget it, you know, it's on my shirt. I'm a futurist by profession, and I don't know if anyone in the room is from or knows Houston, but that's where I did my graduate work, so it's great to be back here in Texas at South by Southwest. And I think, you know, one of the advantages of kind of working in the space is that you really get to look at the long arc of progress of humanity, and where things could look really dark, you understand that that does not necessarily, you know, dictate the future. And so I'm really looking forward to, you know, this panel. A fun fact about me, I literally wrote the chapter about the future of history in the book Aftershock. So looking forward to how we all together will actually shape the future together with young people. Speaking of young people, Julia.
Hi, everyone. I'm Julia. I'm from Brazil, and I'm here to talk about my experience with the Game Changers Coalition and my activism in my community. It's important to say that I'm super excited to be here, the same way I'm a little nervous, so please be patient with me, because it's not easy to be here, and you understand why. I serve as a social mobilizer in Brazil, advocating for the rights of our girls and our young people in the São Luís, Maranhão, in Brazil. And with the Coletivo Menina Cidadã, in English this means citizen girl, for empowering our girls in our community. So we organized in the last year an event for some sessions like Game Jams to learn our girls how to develop digital games. Also, I'm an economics student in Brazil, and I really like the field of data science, especially when you talk about social indicators, economic, and technology together. So now, Danielle.
Hi, everyone. I'm Danielle Simmons. I'll start with a fun fact. I'm actually from Austin, Texas. It's been very interesting to see how Austin has changed. I now live in Los Angeles, so every time I come back, I get confused. I can't find my house, and I don't know what highway I'm on. Suffice to say, I'm actually an attorney. So I am not, I do not work with UNICEF in terms of employment, but I have been working as a volunteer and also a fundraiser for UNICEF since 2009. I work with an organization called UNICEF Next Gen, and I'll get into that a little later in the talk. But basically, my friend founded UNICEF Next Gen as her master's thesis at NYU, and it's about getting the next generations of leaders to be much more involved in global issues, and UNICEF in particular. So I will talk about that. But yeah, Ricardo, back to you.
Thank you. Exciting panel, as you can see. Really briefly, my name's Ricardo Pineda. I'm originally from Honduras, from Latin America. And I'm a young climate futurist. There's not many like me, but I was specifically a part of a UNICEF program called the Youth Foresight Fellows, where we would get together and discuss the bigger issues of the future. I'm specifically focused on climate. And I'm also a Longhorn. I'm a proud UT Austin student, so I almost feel like I'm from here as well. All right. So let us start with a different approach. Let us start with some futures thinking, because I know that there's a lot of mysticism around what futures thinking is and what's that about, talking about the future. I'm sure we'll get that in the panel, but for now, I wanted to start with a vision of a future. And specifically, I want to share a vision of the future where young children and young adults are not part of the discussions in the lead up to the development of this future and to the development of technology within this future. So I'm going to be supported by some AI-generated images about what this future will look like if we don't include youth today. So first, imagine a world where technological advancements are only there to highlight economic inequalities. Job markets are only there for those with access to certain technologies and skills. And this has left behind so many young people unprepared for the new economy. This is a tale about inequality. As you can see here, the educational system has failed to adapt while not being informed by the insights of the needs of the youth, of the younger generation. Connectivity, while technologically advanced, is still an exclusive privilege rather than a universal right. And even though we're talking about a distant future here, we still face where 2/3 of the world's school-aged children still do not have access to internet at home. This great digital divide is getting wider, and as you can see in that image, it's a tale about not having access to proper education for children and youth. Social media platforms, gaming, virtual realities have been developed only and exclusively with commercial interests in mind, prioritizing engagement over mental health and emotional health of the users. This has contributed to feelings of isolation, anxiety, and depression amongst the youth that had never been seen in the past. In this scenario, while stark, is sadly not an inevitable future today. As we open this dialogue, let's carry forward with the conviction that the children of youth and the youth of today must be at the heart of tomorrow's tech. With this in mind, I wanted to start with you, Tanya, in this wonderful panel. We all hope a future like the one that I described won't happen. And we know that you and UNICEF deeply care about children and have been having some groundbreaking work around the world and in the United Nations. What is UNICEF doing today that will ensure that this scenario won't be our reality tomorrow?
Thank you, Ricardo. And I think it's really important to recognize that there are multiple possible futures. And this really dark one, while it is possible, it's not probable. And the outcome of where we eventually end up and actually looking around the room, we'll all be living in some future in this time frame. So, you know, we all have a vested interest in this, and young people matter most, and that's really why we care about putting them in the driver's seat and having them at the table, because they'll be the ones living their longest in that future that gets created. But the exciting and kind of empowering part is that what we do today bends the arc of progress, either towards something really dark, such as this evocative picture you've painted for us, or to something much more optimistic. And I'm an optimist, and I can be so because I have the pleasure of working every day to see how we at UNICEF Innovation leverage the latest science, technology, and innovative solutions to address these underlying drivers of changes that could end up there, but we believe won't, because we are already taking action to bend the arc in a different direction. It's important for you to know that there's some key things that we really care deeply about and that frame everything we do. And tech equity in this case is fundamental. What does that actually mean? It's a great little buzzword, and I think it's been all over South by Southwest. But it means that we ask ourselves constantly, who is left out of the equation? Is it gender? Is it marginalized people whose languages are just not catered for? Is it the geographically sort of difficult to reach? Who's not there? Is there some sort of bias that, you know, we're not really recognizing for some reason? Is there some sort of unintended consequence that we really haven't thought about? So these are things that we are constantly asking ourselves as we very much immerse ourselves in the cutting edge of what is coming out of both private sector R&D and academia. So, you know, we do need to be concerned, though, because we can't also afford to be technological optimists and believe in a silver bullet. Because, in fact, there are a number of drivers that could end us up here, as I said. For example, today, 1 in 10 people have no access to energy, you know, electricity, power, at all. And they're sitting in situations where probably the regular grid that you and I would understand is never going to reach them. We've got, in terms of connectivity, only 1 in 3 people in the world actually have access to the internet in whatever form, you know, whatever device you're talking about. In terms of learning, there is a massive learning crisis. We've done a global study that shows, and this, I mean, sounds ridiculous, but 2 out of 3 10-year-olds around the world do not have the ability to read a simple sentence in whatever their language of instruction is. And that is crazy, because as business people, governments, or, you know, the United Nations, that those young people are the building blocks of future economies and societies. So that is a crisis that needs to be addressed. Youth unemployment is critical as well, because the future of work has changed radically. AI, automation, and brand new industries that are being birthed on a regular basis don't match up well to sort of our education system. So what are we doing about that? Well, we are doing a lot about it, and I think the exciting opportunity for everyone here is that you can be a part of this as well. In terms of energy, we're working with researchers around the world on what kind of new types of renewables avail themselves to the sorts of places we're talking about. So this is not reusing your coal-fired power plant, but it's looking at modular off-grid or tiny microgrid solutions that can actually get that last 10% of people to actually have power. With power, you know, that will enable connectivity. We have a massive project called Giga that is aiming to map and connect every single school in the world by 2030. It's not very far away, and we're making amazing progress. We've connected in the last 2 years 2.1 million students who never had connectivity before. In terms of designing, you know, and being the entrepreneur of your own career and really having people who are ready to be green collar workers, ready to be the drivers of entrepreneurial ventures in today's world, we have a huge a program called Upshift that equips young social innovators to be able to identify and build those businesses of the future in their communities. So amazing things. I mean, that program alone is in 47 countries, and just last year alone, 4.1 million young people graduated out of it and are creating social ventures and private sector sort of SMMEs in their communities. So drivers of the economy, you know, and those drivers are young people. So this is sort of great, but we need, you know, a lot more, because we don't work alone, and hoping to dive more into that, because I think one of the areas that we might be, you know, having to really work at is who still might be excluded or not included enough in what is being done.
Amazing, Tania. Thank you. I think it's really, I want to say, inspiring. So many of the, I want to say, they're big goals, you know, reaching or giving electricity, giving connectivity to internet to every school by the end of the decade, for example, is such a powerful mandate. It's such a powerful goal that we should all have, and we should all put our hands on board. And despite the goals, there's still so much to do, right? I think we can all agree that within the communities, that, you know, in the grassroots levels, the realities are still very different from what, you know, what we're hearing most of the time here in these panels and everything, which is why I'm really excited and proud to introduce Julia. Julia, Julia's 20 years old, by the way. She's very young. She's amazing, impressive, a social activist from Brazil that traveled a long way to be here. Can you tell us a little bit more about where you're from, Julia? Tell us about the Changemaker Coalition, as well as your own work with the community, and why do you believe strongly about ensuring that you are included in shaping the world's digital future?
Sure. Thank you, Ricardo. First, I need to speak about my home state, please. I'm from Maranhão in Brazil. And Maranhão is a unique place in Brazil. We are in the middle of two very important regions in Brazil. The Northeast, a beautiful place supported by tourism. And the same in the Northeast with the Amazon rainforest and native culture. But however, the problem is that Maranhão, it's so lacking serious human lives. Education, health, security, basic human rights. Maranhão is the state with the highest number of the people living in extreme poverty in Brazil. Then we can found the Menina Cidadã. In the next slide, we can see us. This shirt here represents us. And Menina Cidadã, it means in English, citizen girl. And it's a social movement in our community. And this is my friends, my family too. So we advocated for a better life for our young girls and the whole community. We work for more quality education, health, and to guarantee securities. We started the Menina Cidadã after the pandemic in 2020. Because we saw the problematics in our territory. The first step was to talk with 200 girls like us, discussing about our territory and our rights and their lacks. And we made a big list of needs. Then we talked of some public authorities and sent them something like a basic human declaration letter. About our territory. We saw the situation get better and we sent our letter. We are now focusing on the inspections of goods and about our service in our territory. The second thing I want to talk about is the Game Changers Coalition. We can see in the next slide. And because of my work as a social mobilizer with the Citizen Girl, I was invited by UNICEF to join the Game Changers Coalition. The Game Changers Coalition is literally a coalition between UNICEF and some company games. The Game Changers Coalition is a program to develop some skills for young girls like me. We receive training and we learn how make a game, how construct a game, develop for a game develop curriculum. The Game Changers Coalition, our first step was participate of a training of trainers. I joined other girls from India, Cambodia, Kazakhstan, South Africa, and Armenia. In a global workshop where we developed together three pillars of Game Changers Coalition. Build her foundation, build the game, and build the global network. So I think the experience of joining a hackathon like this was an opportunity that every girl that should have. So some of my friends are using the computer for the first time. And still, after 2 days of marathon, all the groups present a video game. So that was impressive, really. And one important fact is that we had a special topic, a rent-resist game jam. A game jam is a competition that developed digital solutions with games. So the games were about the topics of racism and gender, and because they are super important to us. For example, my friends, the girls, developed games about a salon for curly and frizzy hair, and a football game with female characters. So, among other incredible ideas, it would be impossible to list all the things we have learned in this event. Some of my friends say that they learn, they should have believe more in themselves, and trust me, there's a change in life. So, I think this is a good opportunity to be here, and I'm very excited.
Wow, thank you, amazing, really inspiring. Yeah, a round of applause for that. I really, when I was able to talk to you, I was like, how, you know, how can they get to a computer and in 2 days already be developing video games and everything? And it just goes to show how empowering, how, you know, reaching out for the first time, how giving access to opportunities really goes long ways in communities, in the grassroots level. So I'm really happy to hear that. And I'm really happy to hear that point of representation of, for instance, showcasing video game characters as women, as different representations of different physical characteristics. And I know we're gonna get more into this. Danielle is here to represent the UNICEF Next Gen and has been part of it since its inception. Can you tell us a little bit more about the importance of the Next Gen community and what role does it play into UNICEF's mission? And if I can add one more question really briefly is how do you bring those leadership insights into the tech sector?
Yes, thank you. So I think before I even get into that, I want to make a point that one thing that I think is going to be very important for the future, especially when we're thinking about the youth, is connectivity. So when I'm listening to Julia and I'm thinking about how we started with NextGen when we were about her age, which I won't say how long ago that was, but connectivity was the part that we yearned for the most that we did not feel we were receiving. We really wanted to connect with other people in our situation that were all over the world. And growing up as an internet-based generation, we didn't see the geographic borders that we had been taught since we were a child. Those didn't feel as relevant to my generation. We liked the same music, we laughed at the same memes, we were watching the same social media things. So I feel like I could connect just as well with someone that grew up across the world as I could with someone in my hometown. And I think focusing on connectivity, which will require technology, is going to be something we're really going to need to push the UN to focus on in the future. And I think that comes up with tech equity. But when speaking about Next Gen, so UNICEF Next Gen, again, was created in 2009. It was created in New York. It started in New York, which is where I lived at the time. And we started about, I don't know, like 10 of us or so. And now it's all over the world. So it's people between the ages of 21 and 45. They're usually take on some leadership role in their industries. It could be the private sector, it could be government, it could be the nonprofit sector. But what connects us all is we are leaders and we're self-starters. We do, and kudos to UNICEF for letting us start our own things to support UNICEF, because we can be a bit bossy. And really pushy, and we have very strong ideas about how things should be for the future that can differ from the generations above us. So they've been really cool about that. But we usually organize events, we raise awareness, we lobby our local governments, we meet up globally once a year. We come around from all over the world and we meet up, and to the point of connectivity, even though we'll be from all different countries, we still feel very similar because we're all on the internet and we're all consuming the same media. So we've raised $78 million, I think, so far for UNICEF. We've also lobbied in the United States Congress to push them to support UNICEF's mission and the UN's mission as well. And I think it kind of piggybacks nice off of Changemakers, because it's, I feel like you might graduate into what I'm doing now, and I might graduate out of it. But yeah, that's what we do. And then what was your second question?
No, and how does it support to bring insights to, or contribute, I want to say, to the leadership in the sector?
Yeah, so my personal background, I'm a scientist, a neuroscientist by trade, then I moved into law, and I have a firm now, and we focus on tech companies. And I've been able to work with the innovations team, the UNICEF innovations team, and they do ask and listen to a lot of our advice, and because we get things that they're just not able to see in the private sector. We have access to resources that they're not able to tap into on a regular basis. And so the innovations team, which Tanya is a part of, is probably my favorite team at UNICEF, because they're really focused on the future. They really bring in disparate communities to get to that future, whether it be government, private, nonprofit. And I find it to be the most engaging in terms of the younger generation's ability to plug in and assist. And really influence where UNICEF is going.
Amazing. If I would characterize this panel in one word, I'd say girl boss, for sure. This is amazing. Really inspiring to hear all of your work, all of your experience, and of course, all of the big challenges that we're tackling. I do want to acknowledge that sometimes private companies and the private sector still has to be pushed to go outside of their clientele. They have to go outside of where they regularly provide their products, their services, and they have to reach the world, essentially. They have to reach developing countries. They have to reach low-income communities, because we all have to be a part of this tech wave that is coming, of this connectivity wave, and most importantly, we all have to have a fair chance of participating equally in our future. And in this regard, I think that this panel is unique, because it brings in three very different perspectives: a perspective from the multilateral world, the UN, a perspective from youth, and also from grassroots movements, and a perspective from leadership, I'd say, which are really important, I want to say, sectors of society. We have a large number of tech companies at South by Southwest this week, and potentially many representatives and future, if not current, leaders of business here in this room. For my panelists here, I want to pose an open question. What's your message to the private sector? Why do you think it's important for children and young people to have a greater role in the way tech is being developed?
Well, I want to jump on that one, because before I joined the UN, I worked in the private sector myself. So, I think it's one of the things we need to get over is that while this all sounds like it's doing good, and it's do gooding kind of work, and that maybe in the private sector you want to shove it in your corporate responsibility report, that's actually not where it belongs. Because doing good is fundamentally good business. This is bottom line business that we're talking about. Private sector companies are interested in young people, that 18 to 24-year-old, sort of 18 to 35, depending on what industry you're in, is highly desirable. And, we want to caution you, as Danielle, as you said, working with young people is challenging. It is. And they are the most discerning customers you're going to have. So youth washing ain't going to work. But why is it worth it? And why is it worth it, as you said, Ricardo, in emerging economies that so many tech companies are trying to break into? It's worth it because those, by bringing young people in, not just as, sort of personas in your user journeys, or people that you bring in to do a little bit of UX research on, but actually bringing them in at early design stage on figuring out, hey, where could this product go? What is its value proposition in this market? That will look quite different to your traditional business models. They will help you revolutionize the way you think. We've seen, and I've seen from my work previous to UNICEF and in UNICEF working with the private sector, just so many of those stumbling blocks where there are key assumptions you make about your business that are not going to work. They will not apply in emerging markets. They will not apply if you're bringing them from a premium model, you know, into developing countries. But there are many models that do work. There are context is exceptionally important. And the same way, Danielle, you were talking about, you know, what is it that makes certain memes universal and some of them completely not, you know, just in a subculture that doesn't need to be divided by geography. Understanding that nuance is why you want young people kind of at the table, because they will certainly, you know, help you come up with things you haven't thought of. So what do I mean by that? If you're in the mental health space, which was one of the pieces about that horrible future you painted for us, which, you know, I think some young people who are in the throes of real mental health issues may feel that that is where they are right now, is that we've seen a number of solutions, whether they are apps or they are sort of ways for people to reach out to seek help, not being really effective because they haven't bothered to sit down and actually design them ground up with young people. So they don't, you know, they're not operational in hours. That's a simple one. You know, business hours doesn't apply if you're having a mental health crisis. That is, you know, that's sort of probably signal number one. If you have something that is depending on something that is gated by time, it's not going to work. Sort of another piece where, in fact, we did a whole bunch of work in Ukraine and with Ukrainian refugees. The sorts of language and the indicators that young people have when they are moving towards crisis, those early indicators, they're none of the words, they're none of the behaviors that you've mapped out that you think you understand. So if you don't bring those people to the table, you are not going to have the most sort of successful in. Another example, EdTech. The EdTech space is, it's like insane. There is so much noise that it's difficult to pick up the signal of what actually works. So there's a lot of hype, especially in terms of apps and platforms. And what we really care about is distinguishing one from the other. So one of the investments that we've made has been in a learning innovation hub that specifically is focused on figuring out what is hype and what is not, and bringing out a validation of things that work and understanding the context they work in, because it's not every solution everywhere. And we put our money where our mouth is as well. We have a venture fund that we funded about 72 startups around the world. And you know, so we fund from proof of concept and pilot through to growth funding. And then the broader UNICEF, which works in 190 plus countries, has an amazing footprint for kind of global testing, iteration, and scale. So it really is an amazing sort of resource to work with as well. And we work in just the Office of Innovation alone with more than 600 partners, a huge chunk of them being the private sector. So whether you're talking about, you know, very large companies, or you're talking about startups that really have niche expertise, especially, you know, as we're seeing in emerging technologies, frontier tech, you know, AI, niche machine learning application, niche language learning models, there's just a ton on the go. But let me come back to close it. This is not just do-gooding work. It's a positive bottom line factor for the private sector. So my question to the private sector here at South by Southwest is, why would you leave value on the table?
Wow, that's a powerful way to end it. I completely agree, and thank you for that. Julia, I know you also wanted to speak more specifically about the gaming industry and how to include youth.
Okay, so first, it's great and powerful that UNICEF brought me here, giving the chance to speak. And I think it is because there are millions of other girls exactly like me in all the place of the world. So giving voice to common people like me represents a lot for me, and also for my community, because it is literally a few have the chance to bring and represent our community. But we just need a little push. We just need one opportunity to show our potential. So we can be empowered and start helping the UN to build the future for other people, because no one is better to this job than us. So my recommendation is for people in the gaming industry to provide mentorships and trainings for girls like me and like girls in my community, because not everyone has the opportunity to travel in events like this. And for the tech industry in general, another recommendation is the business leaders should give opportunities to remote communities in a way their experience support everyone regardless of their physical characteristics. Everyone deserves to have a chance to learn directly of these companies and show their potential. So I think this is the biggest thing I can recommend, my recommendations.
And I just want to add to that, what Julia says is so important, because more than half the world's gamers are actually girls and women, which I don't think is something that we would probably think if we took a straw poll, but less than 20% of the industry are females. So what's the number one complaint that gamers who are girls and women complain about? It's games that don't represent us, games that are not sticky and interesting, storylines, characters. So, and when we speak to the gaming industry and talk about, well, how do you want to push that 20% to actually grow it so that you have the creative capacity to address that gap, they talk about struggling to find talent. So this is where we grow talent, because you will not find that kind of incredible diversity and creativity of experience to build out those incredible games that are going to be, you know, really interesting if we don't start kind of cultivating it through basic skills all the way through up to science, technology, you know, engineering, you know, art and maths. So it needs to be kind of a full system approach, and why your work is so important in the Game Changers Coalition.
So can I just jump in on that?
Of course.
As someone in the private sector and who has been in the private sector for almost two decades now, I would say what I've seen most that the private sector could use advice on is to know what you're good at and know what you're not. So for me personally, one of the things I've noticed the private sector is excellent at, especially I come from a private equity background, is efficiencies. So the ability to do something very efficiently, the ability to get from point A to B in the most expedient way, I think the private sector is excellent at that. However, doing that can leave a lot of casualties along the way. It doesn't consider a lot of the softer things that are important, and in the private sector we're taught that, you know, soft qualitative things are not what we should care about. We should be caring about quantitative things, things that we can see in a numerical way. And I think the private sector should have a seat at the table, but should not be the driving force and the only leaders behind where tech is going, especially when it comes to helping and providing. I know what you were saying around private sector companies focusing on doing good. While I definitely think that's important, I think if they are going to focus on doing good, they should be getting advice from people who are in the business of doing good. So that's what I want to add to that.
Thank you. I completely agree with you all. I wanted to add just a little, but I think quite useful, resource where I was personally involved, and I think it's a point to be made that it's not only about including youth for the sake of including youth, but it's about doing it meaningfully in a way that it empowers, in a way that it creates growth in a long-lasting way. And when we set out with that question, me and the first cohort of Youth Foresight Fellows, we created a digital guide, which is called the Youth Foresight Playbook. It's free to access, it's online, and it also gives concrete recommendations for sectors like the private sector for how to include youth meaningfully. And just to give some ideas of what that means, you know, first of all, to treat them with respect, to treat them equally, not as people with less experience, but to value their experience as being young and their fresh way of thinking. Also to remunerate them, to pay them, to actually involve them in a way that it is not perhaps just focusing on the few privileged youth, but that we really go out around the world to meaningfully integrate different perspectives that will add and bring value to the table. So just a little, I want to say, a point there to be made about meaningful youth engagement. Now, I want to go back to a little bit of the futures thinking. I'm kind of sad of doing it because I was getting hopeful from the panel, but I'm now going to do a question that might bring us to some of the images that we're seeing before. What's your greatest fear? What do you think, what are you worried about if youth and children are not meaningfully integrated today?
Okay, looking at the Game Changers Coalition, I can tell you something. Beyond learning how to create a game properly, we learn how to think smart, how to be creative, innovative. So we can think in group and solve problems together. And this is so powerful. And I think this experience is not only with the Game Changers Coalition, but also with my work as an activism and citizen girl. If you don't prepare the young people to develop a better future, a better world, we will never have this. The future is happening now. And we have in our hands the power to make the difference. So give this.
All right.
So when I think about solving problems, I like to go back to ecology. So in ecology, you find that genetic diversity usually leads to the most fit ecosystems. And so when I think of coming up with ideas, I think the same thing applies. This is my argument for diversity. I don't believe in diversity just for diversity's sake. I think we see that diversity creates fitness. And I believe it creates fit ideas as well. And so when we're thinking who needs to solve these societal problems, a lot of them we've created, some of them exist having nothing to do with us, I think we're not going to only need to seek, you know, geographic diversity, ethnic diversity, socioeconomic diversity, but we're going to need to also look at the age groups. And I do not think it needs to just be youth. I think it needs to be everyone. I always think about culturally in, you know, African communities and other cultures, when they think of who the community is, it's those who came before, those who are not here yet, and those who are here today. And so those are the people we really need at the table when we're trying to make decisions of where we're going as a society and a community. So my fear is if we don't have all those people at the table, we're not going to be able to solve these problems. And we see examples of this time and time again in our society where certain people have made decisions and did not bring all the stakeholders into the decision-making process, and the project failed. This is a much bigger project. It concerns everyone here. So I think it's really not even an option not to have youth at the table.
Agree entirely. Sorry, were you going to say something?
I was just going to just jump in and say, you know, I think the thing you asked, like, what do I fear most? And it's actually not only what you shared with us as a possible future, which only impact a certain, you know, number of trends and drivers, but it is, you know, what about other areas that we're not looking at? And let's talk about, well, we won't talk about, but we were talking about in the beginning, health, a massive, massive area, incredible advances in science and technology, youth, marginalized populations, people who cannot pay premium amounts are excluded from, and I would say a sin of omission, not a sin of commission, precisely, Danielle, because of what you said. It's really difficult for policymakers to understand what the heck is going on. I think we've seen great examples of how it's just so difficult for them to get their handle on something that is very pervasive, like digital technologies and social media, let alone these things, which are far more complex. Researchers, you know, at their hearts, they really do want to deliver research impact, but it's just difficult for them to sort of see the wicked problems that, for example, people in development and humanitarian contexts in the UN and nonprofits know well. And for us, it's really difficult to kind of communicate, to get through the jargon, to speak another language, right? Really to translate and see each other. And so I think for as long as that it persists, there are just so many more infinite possible, you know, unpleasant, not preferred futures that can happen. And that's why fundamentally this transdisciplinary approach of bringing all the stakeholders around in a really level playing field basis is something that in the work I personally lead at UNICEF is what it's entirely focused on at the edge of research.
Thank you. Thank you to the three of you. I think it's important to highlight those worries. I myself, if I may add really briefly, I'm worried of the environment, I'm worried of climate, and I'm worried of the toll that technology might bring to it. Just the training of large language models has equaled to the annual electricity consumptions of countries like Argentina. So imagine the amount of stress that we're putting into our resources, into our planet, in the name of many of the technological developments, while these countries are still suffering, are still having so many pressing issues. And it sometimes almost seems like it's a trade-off, and it shouldn't be. So I think that I agree with your point there in the end. I think when speaking about futures, we also have to envision the things that are perhaps not quite immediate, but that in the end may be impactful not only for us or not only for the younger generation, but even for the future generations to come. We still have a few minutes before closing remarks, so I just wanted to ask one more question perhaps to you, Tanya, and it's, we've been focusing a lot about looking at the futures outside, but what about looking within us? What's the United Nations doing to transform itself or perhaps to become a more future-proof organization?
Thanks, and you know, I think it's interesting, this summit for the future that you mentioned is actually a pretty audacious thing. The analogy, sorry, for a very American analogy, I'm not American, but imagine the worst Thanksgiving you have ever been at. You know, lots of people, lots of different opinions, almost no topic kind of cannot be argued about. And multiply that out to, you know, 240 plus countries all sitting around that table. That's what's going to happen in September, and actually many things sort of leading up to that. So it's complex, right? Complex, chaotic, many different perspectives and values. But what an audacious thing to actually aim at, to get the world together and say, you know, we are actually all bound by our common humanity, and it doesn't matter if you're the biggest or the, you know, GDP, you know, economy in the world or the smallest, if you're an island that might be literally entirely underwater and cease to exist, or, you know, you're somewhere where your glaciers are melting and you're most concerned about what that means for your ski season, actually one planet, and that someone for the future is looking at everything. So it's an incredibly audacious goal, and no matter, you know, the many critiques one could leverage at the UN, there's probably no other organization that could put it out there and say, let's get everyone together and actually try to get a handle on it. The other piece I think is really particularly interesting is that the organization, institution has looked at itself in a critical manner and said, you know what, we ourselves are not ready. We are not future-proof yet. And we need to have a culture that is much more about being agile and flexible and adaptive. We need to really rev our talent. We need sort of new skills. We need to have new models about bringing in skills, whether that's buying, borrowing, or growing, you know, building skills. And all of that is really sort of happening. So there's a huge focus on kind of a set of skills that the UN believes are exceptionally important. And it is taking a very self-critical look at this. It's looking at, you know, what do we know about innovation, and do we have an innovation culture? Do we have a discipline? Do we know how to do this stuff? Where is foresight in this? If we are among the organizations that should be foresightful, because we, you know, set these goals for the world that are like 15, 30 years out, that has to be on a bedrock of really great strategy, that's long-range strategy. Where are our kind of partners? Where's behavioral science? Where is data? And data, by that, it's AI, it's, you know, it's machine learning, it is that entire bucket of things that actually so much of the sessions in South by Southwest this year have been about. And it's really looking at all of these sorts of areas. So that's what is leading to September and beyond. And it is a whole process that is trying to build the biggest Thanksgiving table, the most kind of inclusive ones, and all the mini meals that kind of that come up to that. And so, you know, if I had to imagine if it hadn't been taken down, the Google generative AI engine, if you kind of said, well, who the kind of founding father picture going to look like for that, you would not be the case that it was, you know, good Lord, they're people of color. It would be like there's this incredible array of all that diversity sitting around that table that's going to be the founders of a vision, for the next 30, 50 years.
All right. Every time I'll hear the Summit of the Future, I'll think of Thanksgiving now. I think it's a good way to see it, for sure. It's really a big event. It's in September. It convenes all the member states, the member states of the United Nations, and it's definitely a time to reflect of the need for futures thinking. And I don't want to say futures thinking alone, which I know is a profession and quite a thing that we could probably take another panel to talk about, but future thinking for technology, future thinking for climate, future thinking for many industries such as gaming, for leadership, for health, for so many other areas where we're not being prepared. And I think, you know, probably been said many times already in South by Southwest, but examples like the pandemic and so many other disruptive examples have just shown us how underprepared we are as a society. So thank you all for joining. I'm just going to ask one more question, and I want to end it with a bang from each of the speakers. What would be one thing people in this audience could do today to help us achieve an enabling future? Should we start with you, Danielle?
Sure. So for me, for the people in this room, I would say if you're from the United States, it would be civic engagement. I truly believe in local politics. I truly believe getting involved at the civic level, getting people educated, going to city council meetings, understanding what your representatives are doing and what they're saying. Start local, start small. It can be overwhelming when we're talking about these global issues and global politics, but I promise you, local affects global. So you can do that right now in Austin. I've seen a couple panels where your representatives have been here, and they're here and they're talking about what they plan to do, what they want to do. Austin is a very big and growing city. Tech is coming here. People are listening. People are looking at what you all are doing. South by Southwest is getting bigger by the year. I think that can be a very simple thing everyone can do here. And if for anyone who's not in from Austin or in the United States, I think you can do that there too. I think Julia is a perfect example of someone who started engaging locally, and now she's here on an international platform.
One thing that I want to say is important to me to be here, but I'm here, but I'm not alone, because I carry with me the history of several incredible people who live where I live, and just need an opportunity to show our potential in our best. And UNICEF saw our territory, in our history, in our work. But there's not a single history. There are several places in the world just need a good, truly opportunity to show their potentials.
Well, I mean, I love what both of you have said, because I think what we see in that is the point that I started with in the beginning, which is that the arc of the future is built on the decisions and actions or inactions of each of us. And so everything that we all do and you all do can make a difference. As I mentioned, we have hundreds of partners. We have, you know, as UNICEF particularly, I would encourage you to reach out. There is up on the slide that's a QR code to get in touch with me. There is a place for the kinds of actions that you can take. I would beg of you, the one thing that you should not do is do nothing. Because there's nothing like, you know, regret in the end. And individual actions, absolutely. There is an entire, you know, scientific theory around how those individual actions can have remarkable results, and we see this. We see this in these incredibly inspiring people like Julia. We see this sort of around the world, and whether it's ourselves or others, take an action that moves towards just one step towards a future that you believe in, that is aligned to kind of your values, that is aligned to something that you want to sort of see advanced, because it does matter. I don't think any of us can afford to sit back and do nothing. And I would love to connect with you and figure out, you know, where's that something? Where's that place in an organization that's in, you know, 190 countries that you and your ideas and your skills and your organizations can have a place in not ending up where, Ricardo, you challenged us with, but ending up in somewhere that is a much preferred future.
All right, yeah, I hope we didn't end up as doom and gloom as the pictures were showing at the beginning. Thank you all for joining us to this wonderful session. Please, let's give a huge round of applause. And yes, please feel free to connect. I hope that we'll be seeing each other in the last day of South by Southwest. And I hope you can all enjoy Austin. It's a wonderful city. Please have some barbecue if you haven't had it already. Take care, everyone. Thank you.